Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Lauren Booth. This week, two painful periods for the Palestinian people have been marked. Firstly, the 64th anniversary of al-Nakba, the catastrophe in which Zionist forces forcefully removed 750,000 Palestinians from their homes and their lands. I'll be talking to two guests about the impact of that crime on millions of refugees today. At the same time, after nearly two full months of fasting, around 2,000 Palestinian political prisoners this week ended their mass hunger strike. The demands raised included an end to the Israeli prison services' abusive use of isolation, the repeal of a series of punitive measures taken against Palestinian prisoners following the capture of Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit, including the denial of family visits for all Gaza prisoners since 2007. We'll be going live to the West Bank for an update on developments as several Palestinians have gone back on their hunger strike. But first, this report from our Gaza correspondent Yusuf Al-Halou on rallies commemorating the Nakba.
64 years on, the number of Palestinian refugees and their descendants has now reached a staggering 7 million. They are scattered around the world and dreaming of returning to their original towns in occupied Palestine. On the 15th of May each year, Palestinians mark Nakba Day by holding rallies and exhibitions. The elderly who witnessed the Nakba are determined to keep the memory of that day alive for generations to come.
I was 15 years old when my family was forced to leave our home in Beit Jerja. I'm now 80 years old and still want to return to my town and to be buried there when I die. I will never relinquish this right. I taught the love of our homeland to my children, who will never forget or relinquish this right.
The Nakba or catastrophe of 1948 made 750,000 Palestinians dispossessed and displaced, forcing them to flee to neighboring Arab countries after some 500 towns and villages were wiped out by Zionist militias in order to create room for Israel to exist on Palestinian land.
The international community should stand with the fairness of the Palestinian problem and Palestinian issue. This actually would press the Israelis as to listen to the international community and try actually to solve this problem.
The door key has become the symbol of the right of return, which many refugees are still keeping after six decades of displacement. For them, the right of return is a sacred right.
Today we're here to tell the world that we have a right, and they're not doing anything about it yet. It's been 64 years for now, and nothing is done yet, and the situation is getting worse and worse. I'm a refugee, and my homeland is now Erez Crossing.
International activists say that the international community, mainly the United Nations, should uphold its moral duty and support the rights of Palestinians by forcing Israel to implement UN resolutions.
64 years ago marked the beginning of the Nakba, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from their homeland. Today, Israel claims that it still has the right to hunt down the criminals who perpetrated the Holocaust. It claims justice, but it denies justice to the Palestinian refugees. They have never been allowed to return to their homes.
Since 1948, the refugees have not been allowed to return to their towns or even visit their grandparents' homes, from which they were driven out of.
On the 64th anniversary of Nakba, Palestinians assert their right of return and that they will never relinquish their inalienable rights. Yusuf Al-Halou, reporting for Remember Palestine, Gaza.
Well, joining me now in the studio to talk about recent activities in London, which commemorated the Nakba and also the protests continuing against crimes against Palestinians, is Stop the Wars convener, Lindsay German. Lindsay, welcome to RP
again.
Thank you. Do you think these Nakba demonstrations have an impact? And if so, what impact are they having?
Well, I think what's important is that we have to assert the primacy of memory over forgetting. And this is one of the important things about the Nakba. I was thinking about it the other day. My parents got married in 1948. Mm. So this is a whole lifetime for people. It's a very, very long time. You think of all the things that have happened. Mm. And this has remained constant for the Palestinians. It's now a much bigger issue on the world stage than it was for many, many years, and that's thanks to the Palestinians themselves, the fact they've never given up with the resistance against what the Israelis have been doing to them. But it's also thanks to the movement around the world, which has grown much, much bigger over the last 10 or 15 years. And I think these demonstrations are very much a part of asserting that we support the Palestinians.
What about the sort of people who are coming on these demonstrations now? You've been with a convener from Stop the War from the beginning, I think. Is it growing, as you say? Is it a youth movement? What sort of movement is it?
Well, I think it's very interesting because if you look at who is on the demonstrations, it's a very real mixture of people. I mean, I met some people there last week that I hadn't seen for many, many years who were active socialists back in the 60s and 70s, but who regard Palestine as an issue they should still campaign around. I also met people of 16, 17, 18, new generations. There's lots of people from Arab backgrounds, Palestinians themselves, from other parts of the Middle East, but also lots of people from Britain who are saying this shouldn't be done in our name. Our government is complicit in not indirectly oppressing the Palestinians now, but the EU is complicit in supporting Israel in its policies. The British government, of course, was involved with the mandate that it had after the First World War in directly occupying the region. So Britain has a very big role in it, and a very bad role that it's played over the last few decades.
The Zionist argument about a silence that is preferable for them around the subject of the Nakba, the refugees, the people still living in limbo with no status after 64 years is, there are other places. There's Kashmir. What about Kashmir in 1948? What about other occupations? What's the difference with Palestine?
Well, I think the important thing to say here, it's true, there are other places where national groups find themselves displaced, where they don't have the right to a nation. It's true that there are all sorts of oppressions in other parts of the world. I think what makes Palestine absolutely distinctive is the role that Israel has played. I mean, after all, this is a country which is established supposedly on a land without a people, a people without a country. So it's that they said, we're the people without a country who are going to a country without a people. Now, this was just a lie. There were people in that country, they were the Palestinians. So I think that's what makes it particularly remarkable, that you have a kind of settler state right in the middle of the Middle East. And it is this which has caused the great antagonism.
Lindsay German, thanks for that. We'll come back in just a moment, because joining me now via satellite from the Gaza Strip to talk about the effect on millions of young Palestinians from her point of view is Yasmin Reba. Yasmin is a Palestinian refugee and activist. Salam, Yasmin.
Hello, and I'm happy to have you in the show again.
Thanks for coming on. Listen, your experience as a young refugee, what's been the effect on your parents and grandparents of never returning to their original land in Palestine, despite you only living, I think, 15 miles from it?
Well, the effect on me, I'm only one of 5 million refugees that are still away from their homes and wishing and waiting for more than 64 years to go back to their homes. The effects where we don't have the right to have identity, particularly in Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon, because they are the hosting countries. We don't have the full right for mobility, for traveling, a full identified travel passports. We are always identified as a low-level people and the world. We don't have, we still depending on other countries, we're still depending on mainly on UNRWA to offer us the services of education, of health, of even the microfinance, of social services. Living for more than 60 years depending on someone else, I don't think it's a good experience.
The Palestinians are legendary for their steadfastness and surviving under this occupation. But what's the new generation creating that's different, do you think, from what's been going on before?
Well, my generation, I think we are holding the title that we are actually the third generation of Nakba. But we don't want to have a fourth generation of Nakba. We want the fourth generation to be the first generation of a Palestinian state where people go back to their homes and to start their own businesses and build our own economy, our own educational system, our own country with our own hands. What we are doing, actually, still we hope to even being given the space to achieve what our goals, to achieve our aspirations. And once we are giving this place, we are going to make a change. And even if you are not given the space, I think the Arab Spring have inspired so many people to go and fight for this space. And I think this is what we are going to do if we are not given the space again.
Do you think, as a young Palestinian refugee, that there is some break with the leadership? Maybe you're frustrated at the people running Gaza or the people in the West Bank who are running the government. Is the youth trying to do something different, wanting more action faster?
They have tried to do so many things, but unfortunately, when you lack the power, you only speak and you only raise your voice. And through the media, we're trying to raise our voice and raise our issues and our rights to the world. But still, when you live in the place, you cannot do anything. This is so much frustrating. But anyway, we keep talking, we keep saying what we want, hoping that we could be supported by someone else to make a change and to try to break all the barriers that face us towards making the change we want.
And education in Gaza as a refugee, just very quickly, how important is education? And are young people still getting a good education in Gaza?
Education, not only in Gaza, among the whole Palestinian refugees, is fortunately something important because Palestinian refugees or Palestinian people in general, they have the highest literacy rates in the world, which is something good. But even giving a full education through the honorable schools and government schools for the non-refugees, we still in the middle of the way, still in the middle of our way to implement what we learn, implement our skills,
Thank
our
you,
knowledge,
Yasmin.
Because we are not able to go for the employment and the labor market, unfortunately.
Thanks very much for joining us from Gaza. I'm sure we'll speak to you again soon. Lindsay, we're hearing there the importance of education. But education in relation to the Nakba, when you get into a debate with someone British about 1948, about the Palestinian land, what sort of reception can you generalise that you get?
Well, the problem is the way in which the whole story has been told for the last more than 60 years is very much about Israel being a state which enabled the desert to bloom, as though there was no agriculture before, as if there was no society before. So you have to go through the whole argument about what happened. Mm. I always use the example about the right of return, because every Jew anywhere in the world has the right to emigrate to the state of Israel. Whereas the Palestinians who were born there, or the descendants of Palestinians who were born there, have no such right. And it seems to me that is a fundamental discrimination which we cannot allow to continue. And I think if it's put like that, it does begin to win people over. But when it's simply put that there are these violent group of people who are fighting, you know, who are firing rockets or all the other things that put without looking at the overall context, then of course it's incredibly misleading.
I mean, that word discrimination is really important, isn't it? It's what finally tipped people's minds against apartheid in South Africa, for example.
That's right, and it has some of the same elements. Mm. In fact, I remember when the whole process to end apartheid in South Africa began, people thought the same thing would happen with Israel and Palestine, and it hasn't. It hasn't happened. The situation has got worse for the Palestinian people.
Do you think that that's because there's a kind of racism against Arabs that had stopped against black Africans?
I don't think it's that so much. I think it is that the so-called international community, the Western powers, the United States, Britain, the EU, all of these people are very, very wary about confronting successive Israeli governments. And, you know, there is a huge problem here when you have this two-tier kind of society, which you do have. You have it, of course, not just in the occupied territories, but for the Palestinians living within the state of Israel itself. There is this massive discrepancy between the lives of the Israelis and the lives of the Palestinians. And I think it's that people don't want to confront, and it's that we have to make them confront.
And then, of course, there's the problem of the Arab governments, which have large Palestinian refugee populations within them, the Lebanese government, this confusion about not allowing the refugees who live in Palestine in terrible, I mean, sorry, Lebanon in terrible conditions to become a full part of Lebanese society in order that they go home. A naivety or realism on your...
Oh, no, I think it's quite calculated by the governments around the Middle East that they had to accept the Palestinians as part of the various deals that have been done after the wars that took place. But they actually do treat them like second-class citizens. And one of the justifications they use for that is, well, of course, they will go home, even though they've now been more than 60 years in some cases in other countries. But I think what your correspondent from Gaza said was very important about the Arab Spring, that this has actually weakened Israel. It has made people around the world realise there are all sorts of questions of democracy and freedom and justice, and Palestine is an absolutely central part of that.
Thanks very much, Lindsay, for coming on again. It's time now for our weekly look at the growing international movement against Zionism.
Just before the Palestinian prisoners ended their 76-day hunger strike, El Minara Ramallah showed their solidarity with the prisoners. Protesters managed to block roads in Ramallah downtown, preventing any traffic flow. A passerby rudely tried to wave the activist on, however, the dedicated group continued chanting. A young American Jew trying to bring attention to the illegal occupation of Palestine was violently attacked.
The world has decided that this occupation cannot go on, that the refugees cannot remain where they are. The world has decided they must all come home and that the occupied territories shall be free. Israel is the pariah state, Israel is the rogue state, and the United States. My government is responsible, and I'm here to say that not in my...
Israeli forces tried to confiscate his passport. Failing to do so, they used unnecessary aggression and force to remove the innocent young boy, who was talking into a camera just minutes before. London held a Nakba demonstration outside Downing Street to bring attention to Israel's blatant abuse of Palestinian human rights and the 64 years of ethnic cleansing.
Well, we're protesting outside Downing Street because we want to change British government policy. We believe that governments around the world should change their policy towards Palestinian rights, and particularly Britain because of its historical responsibility since 1970.
A Zionist activist was later arrested for breaching the peace as she hurled insults at pro-Palestinian demonstrators.
The end of the Palestinian hunger strike of prisoners held by Israel has been called a victory. But were celebrations of prisoners' rights returning premature? Joining me down the line now from Jerusalem Al-Quds to give us an update is our correspondent, Ibrahim Husseini. Salam, Ibrahim.
Salam, Lauren. The latest is that on Thursday, the Israel Prison Service began the transfer of prisoners in the solitary confinement ward to regular wards. That's in accordance with the deal that was struck on the evening of the 14th of May, just one day before Nakba Day commemorations. The deal, of course, was struck with Egyptian mediators, and it was signed in the prison of Asqalan, the coastal city of Asqalan, just to the north of the Gaza Strip. Of course, this deal is regarded as a major victory, was viewed as a major victory by the prisoners inside Israeli jails and by Palestinians here in the occupied Palestinian territory. The strike, which lasted for 28 days, ended on 14th of May. Some of the prisoners have been on strike for 77 days, making it the longest hunger strike in history. So, as I have said, it's regarded as a major victory. One of the achievements, one of the key demands of the prisoners was the end of solitary confinement. Some of the prisoners have been on solitary confinement for as many as 12 years. So this policy is over now. As I have said, Israel has started to move a lot of the prisoners from solitary confinement wards to regular wards. Another achievement and another demand for the prisoners was the end of administrative detention. Israel has agreed to use this measure only in extreme cases. There has been calls among Israeli officials to use this measure only in extreme and rare cases, and not as liberal as it was used as before. So these were the two key demands of the prisoners. Also, another demand was the visitation, more visitation, especially by the relatives of Palestinians who are from Gaza. Since 2006, Gazans were not able to see their to visit the prisoners inside Israeli jails. Lauren?
Yes, but two of the prisoners are said to have gone back on hunger strike because they're still in administrative detention. Do you know their names?
We know that there are three prisoners who are still on hunger strike. One of them is Sirsek, the other is Rikhawi, and the other are Abu Libde. Now, one of them has been on administrative detention. He was put on administrative detention in 2009 when he was traveling from Gaza to the West Bank, and then was put on administrative detention. Mm-hmm. Under the deal, he will be released on the 22nd of August, but he has been insisting on being released by July the 1st. Mm-hmm. So this is the situation right now with him. He's still on hunger strike.
Ibrahim, just quickly, Israel hasn't got perhaps the best reputation for keeping its side of deals. I'm thinking about the Hamas-Shalit deal, where prisoners released by Israel have been either had their houses attacked, raided, they've been put back in prison. Are expectations high that visitations for family will really happen?
Well, they have so far. They have stuck to the ending of the prison, the solitary confinement policy. We have yet to see whether they will stick to allowing relatives to visit the prisoners. It's hard to say whether they will stick to the deal or not. But given the fact that the Egyptians brokered this deal, Israel will be more likely to adhere to this deal.
Thanks very much, Ibrahim. That's all we have time for in this week's show. Sorry about that, Ibrahim. I leave you now with a collection of images of Palestinian refugees who suffered under the Nakba.